but I passed the breath test. This is McDaniel Reynolds with the Reynolds Defense Firm, and we specialize in one thing. We represent good people facing DUI charges. While you know that it's illegal to drive with a .08 or greater blood alcohol content, not everyone knows that you could be arrested in Oregon for an alcohol DUI even if you blow well under a .08. This is a pretty loose standard, and it's a way that many of the good people we represent find themselves needing our help when they thought they were doing everything right. The Reynolds Defense Firm. We're solid, we're here if you need us, and we are very good at what we do.
BFFT. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with the bald-faced truth.
I was really hoping it would be the Mariners and the Dodgers in the World Series. I wanted that all West Coast World Series. I am not a Mariners fan, but Mariners fans, I feel for you today. I know the sun came up. I know there's next year, as Timmy Lupus said to us in the Bad News Bears. Just wait till next year. But last night was painful. I drilled down on it in a column I wrote at johncanzano.com. Really, what is it about our sports teams, and what is it about the emotion of a sporting event that hurts so much when your team loses, and particularly the way that the Mariners did? Neuroscientists have studied this. The brain chemistry when your team wins, if you're heavily invested and your team wins, the brain chemistry is not all that different than a high you would get off a drug. And when your team loses and it's painful, the brain chemistry and the function that's going on in your brain is not all that different than maybe like watching your team lose is the same as watching your significant other break a leg. For Mariners fans, in the seventh inning last night, it was the simultaneous high of being ahead 3-1, and then George Springer's three-run jack. That's like watching your spouse break both legs. I mean, just really hard to watch if you are a Mariner fan. And I relate a little bit as a Giants fan who struggled for 20 years, but I cannot imagine what Mariner fans have been through. And obviously, we're here for you. We are going to pivot to the Los Angeles market. Petros Papadakis, who is the longtime co-host of Petros and Money, KTLA in Los Angeles, the Dodgers flagship station, there in the World Series. We'll ask him about that coming up. Also, he's been outspoken about USC. He's been outspoken about Notre Dame and the tradition and that rivalry. And Petros Papadakis is joining us now. I'm going to jump right in, Petros. Loss of tradition bothers me. Why is this bothering you so much? The possibility of these two teams maybe killing this rivalry.
Well, it bothers me just because it's like a prerequisite for playing at USC or playing at Notre Dame. It's been going on for 100 years. The only thing the rivalry has stopped for is World War II and the pandemic. And other than that, we've played it. Our histories are all wrapped up in each other. And it's a rivalry and a game that marks the reach of college football. I mean, in a time where we play games in Dublin and, you know, Australia and London, I mean, this was the original reach. This was a game that was played with train travel, intercontinental kind of deal. Or cross-continental deal for USC and Notre Dame. And it's part of our identity as old players that if you're a USC player, it's likely you played at Notre Dame 2 times. And if you're a Notre Dame player, it's likely you've been took the field at the Coliseum a couple times. And we never forget that. It's bred in our bones. It's part of the DNA. Now people can say, well, the backyard brawl went away. The holy war went away for a couple of years. Yeah, this is different to me. This is truly a sacred cow or a holy grail of the sport. And if we're not going to play Notre Dame, why don't we just change our uniforms to the Sacramento Surge of the World League back in the day? You know, make them translucent, because it's not USC football anymore. That's my feeling about it. And I know that they didn't used to play in the Big Ten, but that doesn't mean anything to me either. I don't care. Just because you play at Nebraska doesn't mean you can play at Notre Dame. What the hell is that? I mean, in 2005, the year that Pete Carroll's team ended up losing to Texas in that BCS championship game. Their non-conference was Nebraska, Arkansas, who had Peyton Hillis and Darren McFadden and Felix Jones. They didn't miss a beat. You know, they played everybody, and that's the bar at USC. So to me, the fact that any head coach or athletic director or anybody would have a say in ending the Notre Dame rivalry or changing it to something unrecognizable that's at, like, you know, Allegiant Stadium in Las Vegas is really bad and unexcusable. And I understand the modern arguments, but this one's not okay.
The loss of tradition is sad to me. The fact that tradition's being put at the wayside, you know, certainly the downfall of the Pac-12 stunk for a number of reasons, but, you know, throwing away 108 years of history was a bad thing. And you hear everybody doing what's best for themselves. Everybody's focused on that. Do you think USC's mindset has more to do with the times, or is it the people involved? Like, if Lincoln Riley's not the coach, if it's somebody different, you know, would they put up more of a stand here saying, yeah, we want to play this game?
Yeah, Lincoln Riley is really kind of the first person I've heard to say anything like this. And I think this all started with him. And now the USC administration feels like they need to get something out of the negotiations just so they save face. And then there never should have been negotiations. This is just what we do. Odd years, you play there in October. Even years, you play out here. There are historical reasons it's happened. And if you're too soft to play Notre Dame out there in October, then you're too soft to be the coach at USC. You're too soft to play in the Big Ten, and it shouldn't be happening. But this started with Lincoln Riley, who has not been an overwhelming success at USC. They haven't proven their ability to beat Maryland or Minnesota, you know, let alone the Ohio States of the world. I know they just had a big win over Michigan, but why should Lincoln Riley, who is a blip in USC history, get to alter what is such a sacred thing to so many of us? I think it's a terrible thing, but yeah, I think it really does have to do with personnel. And now USC finds themselves in a negotiation where if they don't get something, they feel like they're going to look weak, or something like that. I mean, to a certain degree, I understand what happened with the Pac-12, mostly because of reporting that you did and John Wilner did for a decade plus about how poorly it was being run and how we became paupers when everybody else was becoming billionaires. And USC and UCLA and Oregon and Washington eventually went on to protect their self-interest and join the bigger conference and align with Fox. But just because you're playing in a different conference, that was what was so special about the Notre Dame game. The fact that it had nothing to do with conferences. It has something to do with the lore and the reach of college football. And I'm just very bothered by it. But your question is yes, it's a personnel thing. And I think it starts with Lincoln Riley, who has no West Coast roots. He's a guy from Mule Shoe, Texas, who's an air raid coach deep down, an offensive coordinator at heart. And I understand why he doesn't want to play the game. He just tried to throw a double pass in the pouring rain in the fourth quarter of this game. You know, I mean, he doesn't get it. He doesn't understand the big man on big man mentality of the game. That's fine. Cycle your way through USC, like it or not, this should be happening. And the head coach at USC should never have any say. Yeah. And whether or not you take this job to go play at Notre Dame and beat them and prepare guys for a physical game in the middle of the season. That's why it's hard to coach at USC or play there. I just don't understand. I know there's a lot of change, but this is something that should have never been negotiable.
Never should have been. And it shouldn't be up to people who are there for a blink. You talked about going back to the train days where this series was played with teams traveling, people traveling by train to go see the game. You know, you've run out the tunnel onto the field and played against Notre Dame. And now you've got a coach who's here for what, if he fulfills the contract, 10 years, and he's going to make a decision that is going to impact, you know, the next century of this rivalry. Because, you know, once they stop it, Petros, once they stop playing it, they're not bringing it back. It won't.
No, and hopefully that it won't get to that. You know, I think what they want to do is move it. to, that's what USC wants, to move it to September. It won't be the first time it was moved. Back in the train days, USC did go all the way out in November, and it was a November thing. And the wives of Newt Rockne and Howard Jones wanted to see the leaves. Howard Jones's wife wanted to see the leaves change. And they said, well, that's fine. They're still changing in October. So we'll move it up so the travel on the train, you know, is not as bad. So they did move it a little bit way back then when they were still taking trains. So it's been moved before. Moving into September, okay. I mean, as long as it's in South Bend and it's in the Coliseum, you know, it doesn't need to be at the Peach Bowl or some stupid place like that. I guess that's okay, you know. But it feels like they do want to move it, and that's, you know, it's a weather-related thing. But, I mean, you're playing in the Big Ten now. This is, you signed up for this, you know, and this is just another game that's sort of like that, but very, very special. So, I mean, I understand, but I just don't understand. It feels like the people involved have no idea how the people involved, like me, you know, the people whose identity is part of being an ex-USC player, I don't think they really understand how much it means to us and coming out of the tunnel there. And I mean, it's your whole history as a young man, as a football player. And I'm not willing to let it go without using my platform, Screaming and yelling and acting like an idiot about it.
Yeah, and this is a crusade. I want to say this is a crusade you're on. You've grabbed a hold of it. I can tell that it matters to you. It matters to me too. The history of this game matters to me. And I think generationally, you know, I look back, you know, in prior generations, and I think about all the decisions that were made that we benefited from and what college football became. This is a bad thing. If this series comes to an end, it's a bad thing, not just for USC and Notre Dame fans. It's bad for college football. You need this game in college football. You need these kinds of games. What do you say to Lincoln Riley when he says, you know, look, in the Big Ten, it's just good enough to play a soft non-conference schedule, do well in the Big Ten. We can make the playoff that way. What do you say to that argument?
Well, the college football playoff's not going to get any smaller. It's going to get bigger and bigger. So if you're USC and you're fourth place in the Big Ten, you're going to the college football playoff. And now, does it matter if you played Missouri State or Georgia Southern? I mean, would you rather see that on the resume if you're on the committee? Or would you rather see what happened against Notre Dame?
Yeah.
For God's sakes. Playing the Notre Dame game, other than the physical toll, and I understand that it takes, is part of being the USC coach, and it's part of why USC should have a better resume with their non-conference every single year, right? I mean, it's not rocket science. Like in the BCS era or, you know, something like that, maybe I understand it. But, I mean, you could lose games and still go to the college football playoff, especially to a ranked Notre Dame team. So I would say to Lincoln Riley, it looks bad. It's a bad look. It makes you and USC look soft. And, I mean, if it looks like a duck and acts like a duck, God help me, it could be an Oregon duck. By the way, I love the Grateful Duck uniform. And I'm very excited about that this week. That's pretty good. The guy that's producing the game on Fox, Jake Jolivet, is a great, not only a great producer, but a great music guy and always has the best playlist, and he loves the Dead. So he's like a real head. So it's going to be a really great playlist. I can't wait to see that on FS1.
Speaking of big games over your shoulder there, Dodgers, how you feeling about the World Series? How's LA doing with the World Series?
Well, you know, they handle it better than they do in Seattle. Let's just put it like that. You know, those poor people, they get so emotional about it. But, you know, I think there's a complacency. You know, the fans expect them to be great. I mean, they're so great. What they've been doing in the playoffs is a lot of fun. And we have a lot of access to it being the Dodger station. So it's fun to see Ohtani and all these guys perform. And, you know, what Andrew Friedman, the president of baseball there, said is true. You know, I mean, I see it every day when I'm out there. These guys are on their knees out there working and doing fundamental stuff. And, I mean, they really, for a team of superstars, they have a great work ethic and great attitude with each other. And it looks like they're rolling at the right time. They got those four pitchers, and they got Shohei Ohtani and Mookie Betts and a lot of guys that are a lot of fun to watch. And then making it Canada versus the Dodgers brings kind of an international flair that should be kind of fun. As much as I'm a, you know, West Coast guy and would have loved to have seen Seattle in it, just for those, you know, just for those people's sanity. But maybe it's better. they just can't handle it.
Yeah.
But in LA, the Dodgers are the most watched sport in the world. They have a giant stadium that it's constantly full, you know, despite the prices. People just love the Dodgers. It's part of the identity of the town, more so than the Lakers, USC, UCLA, you know, the Rams or the Chargers. This is a Dodger town, and it always will be. And a big part of that is the Latino fan base. So whenever they're doing well, it's always a joy. Everybody's in.
How different, what a contrast it is to see Ohtani and Betts with the Dodgers and then LeBron with the Lakers. Like that, you know, can you maybe help drill down a little bit on that, the difference in that kind of star leadership?
Well, I mean, LeBron is for LeBron, it really seems like. And it seems like he's for LeBron, and he doesn't really think through a lot of their decision making as a brand. You know, the decision in itself, you know, many years ago, the first thing, you know, that really kind of turned him into a little bit more of a villain. And then, you know, all this other stuff and the weird tweets and just all the self-promotional stuff. And I mean, I thought Kobe was a polarizing player. And of course, the way he died changed a lot of that. But no one's been more polarizing in the basketball world, even in the Kobe Shaq days that I can remember, than LeBron as a Laker. Most Laker fans are counting the days till he's gone. And that's the truth. So I think when Luka Doncic showed up, even though LeBron's still on the team, I think it's kind of a breath of fresh air for everybody, because here's a superstar that the city can get behind that actually has, you know, a shelf life that is a little bit longer and seems to have muted the LeBron is in control sort of vibe. And then the fact that the Lakers have sold to the guy that owns the Dodgers is another piece of that. And I expect them to be as well run as the Dodgers are, which will be quite a change from the Buss family post Dr. Buss's passing.
Before I cut you loose, the Lincoln Riley, do you think the typical USC fan views him as a USC guy, or are they also kind of, you know, tolerating and counting the days unless he has big success?
You do this for work, you know. Yeah. So many people that you run into here, you know, all USC throws parties in the off season. That's what you do when you're not successful. So it's recruiting, it's this, it's that. And people say, you know, this is the Trojans' year, fool. And, you know, I've dealt with that guy for the last, you know, and it's not, you know, it's not until they're going to develop and put their eggs in the basket of offensive and defensive line, locally recruited and developed, which is generationally over many, many decades, what's proven to be successful at USC. They're not going to have any long-term success or anything that people can hang their hat on the way they're supposed to. I mean, USC is supposed to be like Ohio State.
Yeah.
Where is that gap? I mean, it's the Grand Canyon right now. So people just don't get it. I think if you pay close attention, they don't love Lincoln Riley, but they're also, you know, hoping that something fun might happen. And and I can guarantee you it might happen, you know, in September against Missouri State. And, you know, they did have a good win against Michigan. But when they go on the road in the Big Ten, they're just not tough enough. And that's something about his mentality. And I think that people that pay close attention or know the history of the program, the same people that are upset about the talk about the Notre Dame game, understand that Lincoln Riley is most probably and proven over and over again, not the guy. The best success he ever had was with Clay Helton's players.
Yeah.
And Clay Helton was run out of town, you know, and now USC's got, you know, like a $90 million buyout staring at him. If they want to get rid of this guy, they're really between a rock and a hard place. But leave the Notre Dame game alone. Yeah. Let your own mistakes be your own. Don't ruin college football because you've made a bunch of mistakes, personnel-wise.
Love it. Petros, thank you, man. You're the best.
Thank you. And God bless the people of the Northwest. You're the greatest, John. Johnny Cans, the best of the best.
And off he goes. Petros Papadakis, KTLA, Petros and Money in Southern California. You can hear him weekdays, 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. Also, FS1 broadcaster, Fox broadcaster, does a nice job there. Man of the world, former USC player. Obviously, he feels strongly about USC and Notre Dame continuing to play. And man, does he have it good with the Dodgers in that market. They've got a lot to talk about on their radio show, I'm sure, today. I want you to leave it here. You got the BFT statewide on the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Network.